I enjoyed various of the phrases in the songs this morning. From subtle love of softening things, deliver me. Sang deliver me from a bunch of things in that song. And I enjoyed that. How soft are we? Well, I just talked about how soft we are when we think about the heat. We sang this morning, how great thou art. Do we believe that? Is our trust in God, all of our trust in God? I had a burden for a message, and some of it has been probably a long time developing. And one of the things that when I handed this survey paper out, one of the questions on there that was missing the numbers was Social Security. And some of y'all took the opportunity to put a number there and circled one, and some of y'all skipped it. And I was really curious where we are on Social Security. Most of the numbers that came back on Social Security were 100% neutral. I said most of them were 100%. I know that's not the right way to say it, but the majority were neutral on that. I will also say that of the responses I got out of, and I should have looked at the number, what is the membership number that we said just the other evening? I know it's 100, and I'm just going to say 110, even though the number slips me right now. Out of 110 members, I only got 33 back, and a majority of them were ages 40 and under. So I would be especially glad for people 40 and above to get one in the back, fill it out, and just slip it in my mailbox. It's completely anonymous. Some people took the liberty to put their names, and I'm glad for that, if you're comfortable with that. But how we see the issues and the convictions, Proverbs says, for where there is no vision, the people perish. Where there is no teaching, where there is no standard held forth. One of the things that we learned is we must have convictions. By way of introduction, I've been, like I said, thinking about the Social Security thing. And so the title, we're going to get there eventually, but we're going to go down a little rabbit trail before that. But I will give it to you because I know some of you have your pens and papers ready. The title is Insurance, Securities, and a Jealous God. Insurance, Securities, and a Jealous God. On Friday, I had the opportunity to meet a man who's been a customer, but it was the first that I met him, and we met somewhat random, happened to be at another furniture supplier's place at the same time that both of us work with. And he was there, and we got to talking. He wanted to find out about the product that we offer, and I was interested in learning to know him. He was 77 years old. If I remember correctly, his name was Mike, but I am terrible with names, and I didn't write it down. Mike, in describing himself, it didn't seem to take real long for him to introduce who he was and what he stood for. He said, I'm a cynical man. He said, I'll just tell you that, I'm cynical. And he said, it wasn't long into the conversation, he said, that thing hanging around my neck, it was about the size of a quarter, and it kind of had, I don't know what it was, zigzags, pendant, necklace, whatever you call them. He said, that means I am that I am. I am that I am. Is that a big deal to you or not? How many think that's a big deal? How many think that's not a big deal? I am that I am. What was he saying? Well, I was already thinking about insurance and securities and where we put God and all that. Where was this man putting God? I said, well, do you know what that means? He said, that's what God calls himself. He said, yeah, I know that. He said, I believe that nature and me, we're God. Well, that led to an interesting, about an hour's long discussion, and we left friends, even though we very much saw things from a different perspective. But I thought, well, no wonder you're cynical. No wonder we're cynical if we don't have God to put life in perspective. And he blamed all the evil of the world, COVID. So God came up with that. God just plasters that stuff out on people. You love people, so you give them COVID. And he was full of it, all kind of things that he thought God is doing wrong, if there's a God. I invite you to Exodus chapter 3 to give us a bit of perspective. As God wanted to deliver his people, he came to Moses in the middle of the desert, and out there in the desert was this thing called the burning bush. And the bush burnt, but it wasn't consumed. I think we had that illustration here about a year or two ago on the burning bush that wasn't consumed, didn't we? It seemed to me there was fire up front here somehow, and I kind of forget how that all was. But anyway, Exodus chapter 3, we're going to read the chapter kind of as a foundation for our thinking and how big of a deal this is. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush, and he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Draw not nigh hither. Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows, and I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up of that land unto a good land and a large unto a land flowing with milk and honey, unto the place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come up unto me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto him, God, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly, I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee, that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and they shall say unto me, The God of your fathers hath sent me unto you, and they shall say unto me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me unto you. And God said moreover unto Moses, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, The Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, hath sent me unto you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial unto all generations. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say unto them, The Lord God of your fathers and the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and Jacob appeared unto me, saying, I have surely visited you and seen that which is done to you in Egypt. And I have said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt unto the land of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. And they shall hearken to thy voice, and thou shalt come, thou and the elders of Israel, unto the king of Egypt, and ye shall say unto him, The Lord God of the Hebrews hath met with us. And now let us, we beseech thee, let us go, we beseech thee, 3 days' journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. And I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go, no, not by a mighty hand, and I will stretch forth, and I will stretch out my hand and smite Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in the midst thereof, and after that he will let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and it shall come to pass when ye go, ye shall not go empty, but every woman shall borrow of her neighbor, and of her that sojourneth in her house, jewels of silver, jewels of gold, and raiment, And ye shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and ye shall spoil the Egyptians. Chapter 6. Of course, we have some events that happened in between there. Now the Lord said unto Moses, Now shalt thou see what I will do to Pharaoh, for with a strong hand shall he let them go, and with a strong hand shall he drive them out of the land. And God spake unto Moses and said unto him, I am the Lord, and I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob by the name of God Almighty. But my name, Jehovah, was I not known to them. And I also have established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage, wherein they were strangers. And I also have heard the groanings of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians kept in bondage. And I have remembered my covenant. Wherefore say unto the children of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will rid you out of their bondage, and I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. And I will take you for a people, and I will be to you a God, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God, which bringeth you out under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will bring you unto the land concerning which I did swear to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, and I will give it to you for an heritage. I am the Lord. And Moses spake so unto the children of Israel, but they hearkened not unto Moses for anguish of spirit and for cruel bondage. What impresses you about the reading of these verses? Again and again, God is saying, I will do this for you. This is who I am. What does I am that I am mean? I understand it can mean a few different things. And of course, the one is the way it's translated in regular English. It's also, I am that which exists. I am existence. I will be what I will be. And I will exist because I will exist. And also talking about he is who he is. The main differences that I understand between the English and the, I guess it was Hebrew, is that the Hebrew has two tenses, meaning complete and incomplete action, and it also has present and future tense. And so God is who he's always been, and he will be. And he will be on throughout eternity. You know, we live in a temporal world, and we are surrounded by temporal things. And we had an existence, but the Bible tells us that we don't have an ending. God is different in that he always was, and he always will be. And because we live in a temporary world, it's easy to put God in that box too, that somehow God is temporary. But God is not temporary in any form. And we're tempted to do like the Egyptians. And just turn with me to Exodus 32. Where did these people go? God came and introduced himself, and he said all these good and wonderful things, and they got started, went out into the wilderness after a long and troublesome time till they got there. And they weren't out there very long. God continued to desire to reveal himself to his people for who he was. And it wasn't long when God was revealing himself to Moses up on Mount Sinai that we have this account. We had, and it's ironic that at the end of all of those verses, where was that in chapter 3, he has the command to gather all that gold. And what did they do with this gold? Where did that gold end up? It's sobering to realize that in chapter 32, verse 3, well, verse 1, the people talked about how that Moses is up there, and so Aaron told them to break off the golden earrings in verse 2, and verse 3 they did it. They broke them off and brought them to Aaron, and he received them at their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool after that he had made it a molten calf, and they said, These be thy gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. True or false? false. Think of all the things that God had promised them, and then they turn around and they attribute all that to the golden calf. How tragic. How terrible. And then, of course, we know Moses came down off the mountain. And I won't go into all the story, but one of the things that really impressed me is what God said when Moses went back up onto the mountain. When Moses went back up onto the mountain, Exodus 34, verse 14, God told him, first of all, in verse 11, about that they're going to have to drive out all these people, and that they need to be careful not to make a covenant with them. Some of the verses that I read talked about the covenant that God is making with his people. He entered into a covenant with his people. And he's commanding them in verse 13 to destroy their altars, to break their images, and to cut down their groves. Why? Verse 14. For thou shalt worship no other god, for the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God, lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and go a whoring after their gods, and do sacrifice unto their gods, and one call thee, and thou eat of his sacrifices. And he goes on to talk about the intermarriage and the snare that that would be. And so that's kind of a backdrop, a foundation, you could say, for this message this morning. We read the verse where it says that this is the God that I want to be to my people for all generations. Is this still the God who has entered into a covenant with you and I? Of course, we know that we're not under the Old Testament law. We have entered into a new covenant through Jesus Christ. But is God still a holy, a righteous, and a jealous God? Insurance, securities, and a jealous God. Insurance, what is insurance? Insurance is a practice or arrangement by which a company or government agency provides a guarantee of compensation for specified loss, damage, illness, or death in return for payment of a premium. We know that we love our things, and we know that we love our health, and so if we lose any of these things, we also love money. As Americans, we put a high priority on money, and so money can give compensation for these things. But does it really make up the difference? I guess that's subject to opinion. I don't really believe that it does. And so we also have this thing called Social Security, and understand that Social Security is a federal insurance program that provides benefits to retired people and to those who are unemployed or disabled. I understand that Social Security is a plan that mandates putting aside income during the productive time of our life and averages out, or the percentage is 7.5%. 7.5% of our annual income as Americans is requested that we send that into the Social Security. Where did all this come from? We'll get back to Social Security just a little bit later, but the history of insurance and securities. I understand that insurance has a history that dates back to the ancient world. And in the ancient world, the first forms of insurance were recorded by the Babylonians and the Chinese traders. And they would go far and wide to get their goods. The merchants would travel many miles. And along these many miles, there were people who would plunder them. There was also ships that would capsize, and they would lose the goods. And to prevent loss from the loss of goods, they would pay extra money that if the goods arrived, they would... there's a couple different ways it was done, but sometimes it's written about under the Code of Hammurabi. They found it written about in 1750 BC, and under the method there, a merchant would receive a loan. A merchant receiving a loan would pay the lender an extra amount of money in exchange for the guarantee that the loan would be canceled. So I took out a loan for the goods that were coming, and if the goods never came, then I didn't have to pay the bill, is the way it worked. If the shipment was lost at sea or was stolen, then I didn't have to pay the loan. It was agreed upon. But if it came that I paid extra, and that was their method of insurance, I understand that modern insurance that we have today can be traced back to the Great Fire of London, and that occurred in the year of 1666, and it destroyed 13,000 homes plus, and there was a man named Nicholas Barbon who started a building insurance business, and later he introduced the first fire insurance company. Initially, each company employed its own fire department, so all the houses insured had a local fire department, and over the door there were fire insurance marks that declared which company they were insured by, at least after there were multiple companies, and to identify that this is one of our insured houses. They put the mark over the door, and if the house was burning and it was my insurance company that's paying me to work, then we'll put the fire out. And if it's not my insurance company, the fire companies would let it burn because it didn't get any payment for doing that work today, so we'll let it burn. Well, they had to deal with that. They realized that system wasn't going to work. It was pretty selfish and self-centered. It's very flawed. So they, of course, reworked it eventually to where we have it today. Not sure how that development was. I didn't study into that. But understand, in U.S. history, the first insurance company was based in South Carolina and opened in 1732 to offer fire coverage. I think that was, 30-some years before the Declaration of Independence. Benjamin Franklin started an insurance company in the 1750s. By the 1800s, as the 1800s arrived and passed, insurance companies evolved to include life insurance and many other forms of coverage. No type of insurance was mandatory in the United States until the 1930s, when the government created Social Security. And then in the 1940s, the GI insurance surfaced that was to help ease the financial difficulties of the women whose husbands died while fighting in World War II. And it wasn't until the 1980s, which some of y'all remember, that the need for car insurance grew enough that steps were taken to make it mandatory. And so we have the growth of insurance. It wasn't always that way. There was a long time when insurance was not mandated. Why do I need insurance? I don't know why you need insurance. Of course, the word need is in quotes. Why do I need insurance? I think this is probably practical to most of us men who are called to be the providers for our families. We're called to be the protectors of our wife and children, and there's a lot of responsibility that we carry. And I don't know what your journey's been by way of fear. I don't have many of these dreams, but the other night, it wasn't real long ago, I had a vivid dream that there was fire in the sawdust, and you just couldn't put it out. You know how those dreams are just terrifying. It's not quite realistic, because in the end, I think the whole thing was kind of glowing and burning, and yet in the end, it was all out and fine. It was just one of those things. But the terror of fire and losing what you depend on for livelihood. Why I need insurance, number one, to calm my fears. For my emotional stability, right? What do we do with fear? Do we dwell on fear? You know, one way to fix fear is just get an insurance so that there will be no loss, right? The second reason is as security. The other reason we need insurance is as security for the lender of my borrowed money. And the bank says I need insurance because they want my things taken care of so they don't have to pay for them twice, so they get their money back. Thirdly, of course, is simply to cover the need and the possibility of a loss. We all like to be covered from all angles, and if we have a loss, we certainly would want that back, right? You know, there are little things that we can replace easily. Worth a couple dollars, and if it breaks, it's not a big deal. Most of us step on pens in the dark or something and snaps, it cracks, or we break them in our pockets. No, really not a big deal. We just go get another pen. But there are a lot of things that aren't that way. You know, if we drive $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 vehicles, it's really not a big deal. If we have a loss, the engine blows, the transmission goes, we do a fender bender or the thing's rendered rust through, it's really not a big deal. It's $5,000, we'll buy another $5,000 car. If cash can cover, you know, it's not a big deal, right? But if it's a 25 or 30 or 40 or goes up from there, and we don't have the cash to just pay for it out of pocket again, then what if I lose it? And we start to make different choices. I can't afford to lose it, so I need to have insurance. Fourthly, which is born out of three, is to cover our hard-earned money. To cover, and so that insurance becomes a security. I worked hard for this. It took me several years to acquire this, and I want to keep it. I'm entitled to it, so let's get insurance on it. Fifthly, the other reason to have it is to cover others, and it's out of consideration for the other party. I think that's what is standard in this Pennsylvania and in a lot of states, and that is, I think it's called collision insurance, and it will cover the other party in the case of an accident, and that's what our no-fault insurance covers, is the other party to a limit. Also, and there's a lot of places you can go with this. You can get it on your property, so if anyone gets hurt on your property, they're covered. And then, of course, we can throw into that one life insurance. You know, what if I have a family and I'm taken? Who's going to pay their bills? And a lot of people believe it's only ethical that as fathers, we would take out life insurance on ourselves to cover our wives and families. And so we ask the question, as we think about convictions and finding our way, are these wrong? You know, the whole list that we looked at, are they all wrong? Are some of them wrong? Are they, what is the answer to the reality that we live in a world that things break and fall apart and sometimes can be very costly? I would like to look at several principles. I forget exactly how many I have, but several biblical principles for conviction against unrequired insurance and Social Security. And I'm going to, hopefully you notice that word unrequired. I personally would make a difference. If the bank requires it, then we need to get it because that's what they're asking for, or else stay out of the loan. And there's times when we shouldn't take out a loan because it's something that we shouldn't be borrowing for, and we shouldn't need to get insurance for that either, because we should just stop right there. So point number one is the point we already looked at. That's why we went there, to cover that foundation that our God is jealous. Our God is jealous. That's principle number one. Exodus 34:14, for thou shalt worship no other God, for the Lord whose name is jealous is a jealous God. And we know, we read that story, how that they attributed the golden calf to bringing them out of Egypt. And that was wrong. They should have never done that. God will not share his place with anyone or thing. We cannot trust God and trust insurance. Matthew 6:11, give us this day our daily bread. Who are we praying that to? Our insurance in time of need, or to God? Luke 12:22, take no thought for your life what you shall eat, nor for your body what you shall put on. If then God so clothe the grass, which is today in the field and tomorrow is cast into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O ye of little faith? How much faith do we have? You know, God was there yesterday, God is here today, and God will be there tomorrow. What do we worry about? Do we worry about yesterday? How do you worry about yesterday? Today, a little, tomorrow, it's always what's out in the future, right? We worry about tomorrow. God is the provider and sustainer of our lives. He is our protector. We could read the story of Job to understand how that he monitors and mediates. Even in the event of destruction in our lives, he still sets the boundaries around that. And God wants us to trust him for his provision. Trust in God is not blind. It's not ignorant. It's not selfish. It's not arrogant. And it's not foolish. Psalm 118, verse 8, it is better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man. Second reason that we should say no to unrequired insurance and Social Security is my personal conviction, and I know there are some here that differ with that, and I'm okay with that. We can respect and love each other in spite of that. The second reason is we live in a two-kingdom world, and there are two kingdoms being built and maintained and sustained. Of course, we know the one is falling apart. And if you really trust in Social Security, I'd advise you to look into the details of when it's going to fall apart, because it's not going to last that long unless something changes. But Isaiah 31 is pretty straightforward. He put this to the Israelites, and he says in verse 1, turn to there if you care to, if not, I will read it. Woe to them that go down to Egypt. Egypt was, in the Old Testament, a sign of the world. That was representation of the world to them. And what were they going to trust in? It says, and stay on horses, and trust in chariots, because they are many, and in horsemen, because they are very strong. But they look not unto the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord. Yet he also is wise and will bring evil, and will not call back his words, but will arise against the house of the evildoers, against them the help of them that work iniquity. Now the Egyptians are men and are not God, and their horse is flesh and not spirit. When the Lord shall stretch out his hand, both he that helpeth shall fall, and he that is hoping shall fall down, and they shall all fail together. At the end, the end of verse 4 talks about, but the Lord coming down and fighting for Zion. Which would you rather have? An army of tanks and battleships, warships, aircraft carriers, with all the jet power, would you rather have all those things, or would you rather have the God of heaven on your side? Which would you rather have? You know, we're pretty impressed with all of the machinery, but when it comes down to it, we'd much rather have God. He talks about here the things that impress men. Numbers and strength impress us. The numbers of the chariots and the strength of the horses. But when you really think about the power of men versus the power of God, it says nothing. So we live in a two-kingdom world. What's God's answer to the legitimate need? And those things that we talked about, those five or six things, whatever they were, they're legitimate needs. They're legitimate answers that I think that it's okay to think about and then to seek to find an answer to. But what's God's answer and what's the world's answer? Are they equal? I've heard it proposed that way as well. What would you rather have, an insurance company or somebody that you know by way of a brother in the church? And I would like to say that they're not even equal. It's way beyond that. Thirdly, is that the third principle is that God's plan includes physical loss. And loss is not necessarily evil. I thoroughly enjoyed the message last Sunday, and in that case, he's talking about our health and how that our health is going to decline and go downhill. Well, there's people that insure their health, and if they lose their health, their family gets paid. Or they get paid, depending what they lose. Of course, if they die, their family gets paid. We live in a cursed world, and physical loss is normal. But even beyond that, in 2 Corinthians 12, the Apostle Paul teaches us the principle, and he talks about the thorn in the flesh that he wanted delivered from, and the purpose of that thorn in the flesh was this, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in bonuses, blessings, and an extra paycheck, and a car that just runs for 300 miles, 300,000 miles. And no, he says, in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses. Why? For when I am weak, then am I strong. And he lifts up the fact how that we can be broken physically and yet very blessed spiritually, and how God can go way beyond the physical limitations to bring spiritual blessings and strengths that we would never find. We don't find the spiritual strengths if we're always physically strong. We don't have to lean on God because we can handle this. So are we ready to endure loss for Christ's sake so that people could be witnessed to, so that the gospel could go forth? There is a testimony that goes forth from losses that we take. Just like Brother Glenn told us this morning, the man who lived as a servant with nothing in return, and yet he was okay with being a servant without bad-mouthing his master. There's certainly a testimony that goes forth from that, even though I don't know if he was a Christian or not, but it's remarkable. The fourth reason is because God's plan is for brotherhood sharing. God's plan is for brotherhood sharing. Do I need to say not insurance? We could look at quite a few verses. Galatians 6:2, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. 2 Corinthians 8, he talks about how this was being done, that there was great trial of affliction, and they abounded unto the riches of their liberality. And so these people gave themselves to God and the will of God, and they had a ready and willing mind, not willing ignorance like we talked in Sunday school, but willing giving, people who dug in and gave, because they realized that their supply was given for someone else's want, and their abundance could fulfill someone else's need. And so it is written, he that gathered much had nothing left over, and he that gathered little had no lack. And taken also, of course, from the Old Testament, from the manna. Ephesians 4:28, let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to keep for himself and enjoy, no, to give to him that needeth. You think about why people steal. How often do people steal so they can give it to someone else in need? Does that happen? Not usually. And yet he says that you're supposed to learn to work to give. So how often do we work to give? Is that something y'all do, work to give? It is interesting to me that this whole concept is being lost. I think about the events that happened over the years and things that I observed. And I don't believe that we've totally lost it here, but I had to think about an event that happened when I was a child, and how that the father gave, that there was a dad who gave something. And then when it came to the next generation who took over his job, he had to be paid for it. He wouldn't give, and so it was lost. And that was, I'm going to say that was at least 32 years ago from the event that I remember. But you saw from one generation was lost to the next. What about us? Can we give without receiving? It is more blessed to give than to receive. There are numerous other verses that we could talk about. One of the things that's happening currently is that a lot of these small churches that aren't blessed, we're blessed as a conference to have brotherhood sharing and all of that, and that works to an extent. It seems like we're always never able to cover the need, and it always gets rolled into the next time. And I guess I have the question, do we really not have the money to cover it? Of course, I guess we always look at somebody else. Somebody else has the money, right? But as a conference, do we really not have what it takes to meet the need? I didn't take the time to do the mathematics, but I did a little bit of research and found that a 16-year-old in Pennsylvania, and there was a little discrepancy here, but the state minimum coverage to get that can range from $1,750 a year to 2,600. That's minimum coverage for a 16-year-old. And if you got full coverage that would cover all of the accident needs, it would be $7,000. $7,000. So which would you rather pay? Would you rather pay Brotherhood Sharing, which is, well, we don't have to go into all that. It's tax deductible and a lot of different things. Or would you rather pay your insurance? I understand that if you bundle parents and children together, you can get better deals than that. What about the health care insurance costs? I understand that the average annual premium for single coverage in 2019 was $7,188 or $5.99 per month. The average premium for a family, and I'm not sure exactly what size it is, it probably wouldn't cover ours, but is $1,700 and $1,714 a month, and that's $20,500 per year. I thought those things had to be, those numbers had to be off, yet it came from a reputable source, and so I guess that's what it is. It's what people pay. Can we afford insurance? And I think I would say no. It starts to make the Brotherhood Sharing look very cheap and affordable. So the next question is, can we cover both? Can 50% of our people go with the insurance and 50% not? And that's certainly something to consider. But we know that insurance is a for-profit business. You don't see insurance adjusters driving around in old beat-up cars because that's all they can afford. Incidentally, I think our deacons work awful cheap and we probably should support them better. Acts 6 and 7 clearly places a response. Acts chapter 6, verses 1 through 7, and we won't take the time to read that, clearly places a responsibility of the brotherhood to support the needs within the church through the deacons. And so we could ask ourselves, going back to this insurance, so if we're not paying all this insurance, where is the money going? If we're not paying the insurance, where is the money going? Well, you can think about that. Certainly, you probably have some ideas. There recently, just in the last 2 weeks, three weeks ago, someone in a discussion about it told me about this article, Social Security and Mutual Aid. And it's a group of brothers from a variety of churches talking about the need, how that in the last 10 years, a lot of people have revoked their exemption. They got to old age and they didn't have a brotherhood to stand behind them, so they said, all right, we can't do it. We need your help. And they went back on Social Security and the government's now supporting them. And the Social Security office is saying, what's up? You Mennonites and Amish begged for this. And there's a little bit of the history here. Back in when it was started, they begged for it from 1950 to 1965 for this exemption. Eventually it was given, and in 1988, it was offered to anybody, for employers and employees, to anybody who was a part of a group that committed themselves to this plan. But what's happening now is that people are bailing out, and they're saying, what is the plan forward? And so they propose at least a few options, especially for people who aren't in a conference like we are, but it's something to think about. Are we going to maintain our vision for being insurance and Social Security free? And if we're not, then we need to be honest and deal with the consequences, I guess. And so I guess probably the primary question this morning is, do we believe, what are our convictions on insurance? And do we believe in it enough to dig in to help to pay the bills? There's a couple of those principles, and the last one was giving. And I appreciate the generosity of the brotherhood here and the way y'all have been giving, but it won't continue if we abandon it for insurance and if the teaching is no longer given. And I'll admit it wasn't the most favorite message to preach, not the easiest, and I'd rather hand it over to the deacons, but it is something that I'm concerned about. If we're not going to continue to trust God and live within our means, we're not going to be able to give as God wants us to give.